It's the Currents Music News, the weekly podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. I'm Jay Gabler. Today is Thursday, May 16th. We've got a book-themed episode for you this week. I have an interview with the Rock Bottom Remainders, the best-selling rock band ever. No, not best-selling albums, best-selling books. Also, we'll be talking about a book all about an album and a song that came out 33 years ago this week. First, a few music news headlines. Eurovision, an annual European music competition that's become a subject of fascination around the world, is currently taking place in Tel Aviv, Israel. Each year's location is determined by the previous year's winner, and last year that was Israeli singer Netta Barzilai. The televised competition is a chance for Israel to promote itself as a tourist destination at a turbulent time for the Middle Eastern nation. There are ongoing protests and hostilities, sometimes armed hostilities, between Israel and Palestinians in Gaza. Activists have called for artists to boycott the event. No competitors have dropped out, but some have been openly critical of Israel's policies regarding Palestinians in the occupied territories. The finale takes place this coming Saturday, and some militants have threatened to disrupt the event unless their demands are met. For now, the competition continues inside a 15-acre Eurovision village. Here's Netta Barzilai singing Toy, the song that won last year's competition for her. Vampire Weekend aren't exactly AC/DC, but they're about as close to rock as the number one slot on the Billboard 200 gets these days. The group's new album, Father of the Bride, became their third album to hit number one, selling 119,000 copies in the biggest week of 2019 so far for any album that could even vaguely be classified as rock. Rounding out the top five are LPs from Billie Eilish, Khalid, P&B Rock, and Ariana Grande. Here's the most popular song from Vampire Weekend's Father of the Bride, Harmony Hall. And the stone walls of Harmony Hall bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight. Soundgarden have announced the upcoming release of a concert film and album recorded in 2013. The show, recorded at the Wiltern in Los Angeles, concluded the band's tour behind their final album, King Animal. As Rolling Stone notes, the career-spanning nearly 2.5-hour set comprised 29 songs, which included early song Hunted Down, radio hit Black Hole Sun, and several King Animal tracks, such as By Crooked Steps and Been Away Too Long. Soundgarden, live from the Artist's Den, will be released on July 26th in various formats, with screenings including multi-screen experiences in New York and L.A., with, quote, ultra-high resolution audio. In just normal resolution, here's a clip from the film. Susan Beshta, who is known as Susan Springfield during her stint fronting the Erasers, has died of brain cancer at age 67. The Erasers were a well-known band on the New York 70s scene, alongside the likes of Patti Smith and Talking Heads. They recorded only three songs, though, including the single Funny, produced by Richard Lloyd of Television. When the Erasers broke up in 1981, Susan Springfield launched a solo career, but ultimately went back to school. She earned her law degree in 1989 and worked for the rest of her life to improve lives through legal work and volunteering around causes including immigrants' rights and AIDS relief. In a statement, her fellow rocker Richard Hell said, "Susan was one of the musicians at the heart of CBGB, when what was to be called punk was still an undefined desire and attitude developing there. And heart is the word because she was unusual in that environment for her kindness and drive to work for justice." Usually on the podcast, we talk about this week in music history, and this week we're trying something a little bit different. 33 years ago this week, Run DMC released Raising Hell, their hugest album, with the huge single Walk This Way, a remake of Aerosmith's 1975 song. There's a new book all about just that track, and I talked about it with the Currents' Jill Riley and Brian Oak.
Paperback writer,
I'm writing a novel.
Who wrote the book out loud?
Wednesday morning, Jay Gabler joins us for Rock and Roll Book Club. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Jill and Brian.
Good morning. So one of our musical history highlights earlier today was that it was on this day that a little album called Raising Hell came out. Run DMC, I would say, and I maybe I overstated it, but I said that Run DMC are as responsible as the Beastie Boys to bringing hip-hop out of the underground, out of the inner urban circle to broader suburban America as much as any band in rap or rock history. Do you think that's fair?
Totally fair, and no coincidence. They are on the same label, both as the Beastie Boys, Def Jam Recordings, where they were in the 80s. So yeah, basically they had this massive album, Raising Hell, ready to drop, but producers Rick Rubin and Russell Simmons knew that it needed the track that was going to be undeniable, that top 40 radio programmers, that MTV were not going to be able to not play.
Right.
And Rick Rubin knew what the track had to be. It had to be a cover of
Walk This Way, Run DMC, Aerosmith, and the song that changed American music forever.
Now, the heavy book. The guitar bass rap song was not anything new to Run DMC. They had tons of songs already that had big guitar under it. So this was a pretty natural melding. But I seem to remember some rumor, like back in the day, I mean, Aerosmith's star was fading rapidly at this point. Like they were no longer the band they were, and they didn't really even necessarily want to do this song.
Yeah, so Rick Rubin knew this was going to be the song. He knew that Walk This Way, the Aerosmith song from 1975, was a favorite in the hip-hop world, although a lot of hip-hop artists, including Run DMC, really just knew like the first 5 seconds of that song before the guitar lick even comes in.
Really?
DJs like Jam Master Jay of Run DMC would just loop that beat over and over, and so the Run DMC MCs had been rapping over that beat for a decade, but yeah, they weren't really sure why now all of a sudden they need to do Steven Tyler's lyrics. Aerosmith weren't quite sure why, for example, Joe Perry was supposed to come in and just exactly replicate his original guitar part right down to the solo and not reinvent it. But Rick Rubin was like, no, listen, this is going to be good. You should do this.
Rick Rubin knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, it was a huge hit. Yeah.
A huge hit. This was my first year that I ever spent any real time with MTV. We didn't have it when I was growing up, and I was at college at the time. That song was on every single time I looked at MTV. It was as big as Peter Gabriel or Jovi that year.
Yeah, and so some of my favorite stories from this new book by author Jeff Edgers, a history of the whole book is just dedicated to this Run DMC version of Walk This Way. But some of my favorite stories are about the video shoot. So you remember that video, and the premise is that you've got Run DMC and Aerosmith playing in separate rooms, and then Run DMC dropped the beat, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're playing together, and eventually Steven Tyler has to literally break down the wall between them. And apparently, so they told Steven Tyler, okay, listen, we got this one section of the wall. You can just break through, you know, when the spirit moves you. And you can see him in the video. He kind of runs up against the wall, and the first time he sort of bounces off.
Uh-huh.
He's like, well, I thought it was just going to be like, you know, paper, basically. He's like, no. And then the video director's like, right, it had to like look authentic. You couldn't just have, you know, crash through on the first try.
Right.
But eventually he makes it through with a mic stand, and Joe Perry kind of like pokes his head through. And so, yeah. And then eventually they end up sharing a stage together in the video. And apparently they put out the call on New York radio saying, you know, for people to be in the crowd for this video shoot, Aerosmith and Run DMC, they're shooting a video together. Come on out. You know, at this point in history, clearly Run DMC's fan base was largely African American.
Uh-huh.
Aerosmith had their older white fans. And yeah, so I guess like when they opened the doors for the video shoot, the Run DMC fans were there at the doors, ready to go. Oh my gosh, Run DMC. And then they're like, well, wait a second. What about the Aerosmith fans? And they find, oh, you know, they're kind of like waiting out in their cars. And so like, you know, the director's out like knocking on the window is like, hey. And they're like, oh, is it time?
Oh, should we do this now? Okay.
I guess.
Finish up my latte.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I don't think you can overstate the importance. I mean, there's a reason there's a whole book devoted to this. you can't overstate, without a song like this, without what the Beastie Boys did, and I, you know, I hate to draw things along racial lines, certainly there were Caucasian people who were into rap before it crossed over, but this was probably the single biggest song in terms of bringing Black hip-hop to white America.
And that's what Jeff Edgers argues, is that this was certainly not the first rap hit, not certainly the best rap hit, but this is the song that is kind of like the dividing line between rap being considered kind of like a novelty genre for a mainstream audience to being an undeniable stadium force.
The book is called Walk This Way, Run DMC, Aerosmith, and the Song That Changed American Music Forever. And you can find Jay's review over at thecurrent.org. Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jill and Brian. Well, we're talking about books. This past weekend, a new national literary festival called Wordplay took place in Minneapolis. During the festival, I had a chance to interview the Rock Bottom Remainders, a cover band made up of all-star authors including Stephen King, Amy Tan, Scott Turow, and Dave Barry. We'll be posting our whole conversation at thecurrent.org this week. In the meantime, here's an excerpt from our conversation. We talked about books by musicians. You'll hear mostly Stephen King talking in this interview clip. Well, so I'm here with the Rock Bottom Remainders, one of America's most iconic rock bands. So you are writers who play music. I read a lot of books by musicians. What are some of your favorite books written by people whose day job is being a musician, or night job, as the case may be?
I think that both Keith Richard and Patti Smith, yeah, they did a great job with those books.
Those are both great books.
Yeah. I like Bruce's book, too, but I really like Keith and Patti Smith.
Louis Armstrong wrote a really nice memoir that he typed out himself. It's in the typescript.
Actually, Charlie Mingus... Beneath the Underdog is also great.
I read the biography of Jerry Lee Lewis, and I read the biography of Eric Clapton. I was interested in both of those things because both of those people are incredible musicians, self-taught musicians. And I thought, I want to read about how they learned to do what they do. And neither one of them were able to address that issue. Clapton talked about seeing a guitar in a pawn shop, and he said, it hurt my fingers, but I learned to play clawhammer style. And there's really nothing about harnessing the talent to the instrument. And the best story, though, is Jerry Lee, his cousin, cousins were the Swaggarts, you know, the Preacher, and... And they had a little more money than the Lewises did, and they lived up the road. And the Swaggarts had a piano in their house. And in that biography, Jerry Lee says, I didn't even know what it was. I only knew I had to get at it. Mm. Oh, and, wow. You know, and that's the mystery of talent. I think it's something that we're all... you know, aware of and to one level or another. And I think I bet everybody here could talk about biographies of musicians they've read.
I'm just waiting for Gary Puckett to write his book. I just know.
The Union Gap.
Yeah, I just know that it's going to have stuff in it that none of these other books have.
Okay, let's talk about some new releases. As Pitchfork notes, The National are one of the few bands from the first decade of the 2000s to close out the 2010s with a higher stock than what they entered with. I Am Easy to Find, their eighth studio album, puts frontman Matt Berninger in musical dialogue with several guest vocalists, including Sharon Van Etten and David Bowie's longtime bassist and backing singer Gail Ann Dorsey. It also comes with a short film directed by Mike Mills, not the REM guy, who also produced the album. Dorsey sings with Berninger on the album opener, You Had Your Soul With You.
You had your soul with you. I was in no mood. Drift away and I could forget.
For her sophomore album, Australian singer-songwriter Alex Leahy is joining the Best of Luck Club. It's a concept album about a fictional venue that, as NME points out, joins the ranks of the Eagles' Hotel California and Arctic Monkeys' Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino. It's inspired by places where Leahy hung out in Nashville, but Leahy's ferocious alt-rock doesn't sound like anything you'd hear on a honky-tonk. Here's Am I Doing It Right, an arena-ready anthem about overcoming your insecurities. Igor is the fifth solo album from Tyler, the Creator, and his first proper album since 2017's acclaimed Flower Boy. Here's what we know about it. Not much. He only officially announced it last week, and the only music we have from it so far are clips of two songs. Tyler produced the album himself, but Santigold shows up to guest on one track. The album will get about a billion streams when it finally hits, but for now, we have this imposing sample of Igor's theme. In one of the decade's unlikeliest musical stories, Canadian singer-songwriter Carly Rae Jepsen has gone from the one-hit wonder days of Call Me Maybe to stand alongside Robin and Charlie XCX as a venerated pop revivalist. As only her fourth album, and just her second since her breakout Kiss in 2012, Dedicated comes wildly anticipated, and Jepsen is 100% here to give her fans what they want. Songs like Too Much float on a burbling bed of synths and popping percussion, with relatable lyrics you'll be singing along to all summer long. And now for this week's viral clip. Mick Jagger wants you to know that heart surgery hasn't slowed him down. The Rolling Stones have announced a rescheduled string of tour dates they had to postpone for the surgery, and their 75-year-old frontman just posted a clip on social media that shows him in a mirrored dance studio hopping and strutting to the strains of the Wombat song, Techno Fan. Here are some of the comments on Mick Jagger's Instagram. Who said white people can't dance? I thought it was Harry Styles at first glance. Am I high or is this mad funny? I think I need to have what he's having. And he kind of looks like Theon. And that's this week's Music News. I'm Jay Gabler. Our producer is Anna Wiggle. Jade is not here for this episode because she is helping out with the Currents member drive. We are public radio. We run on member support, and we would love to have you be part of the family. Go to thecurrent.org/donate to share whatever contribution is right for you. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with more music news.